With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Podmoth. If you're easily offended, this show may not be for you.
But if you're into that weird fun sh**, you've come to the right place.
You've been warned.
Are you there?
I'm Chris. I'm the believer.
I'm Cody. I'm the skeptic. Okay, stories. Let's get into it.
Hello! Welcome to BSP, Believer Skeptic Podcast.
The podcast where two idiots debate weird phenomena.
I'm Chris, I'm the believer.
I'm Cody, I'm the skeptic.
And if this is your first time listening to us, we're an LGBTQ paranormal comedy podcast and proud members of the Podmoth Network. And this is a full episode, and apparently Cody's dying.
I want you to look at the wave on the Audacity file, because I said hello and my voice just cracked. And you can see this huge spike. So I'm curious to go back and listen to it whenever we edit. Wow.
Well, we could have re-recorded, but we didn't.
No, that'll be fun. It'll be fun. And also, everyone, happy holidays.
Yes. This will be our first holiday episode. Well, do you want to explain what this is? A full episode.
This is a full episode. So we have found a paranormal topic. Chris is like, so tell the children. So we have a paranormal topic. We have some great information, some stories to share, and then Chris will roll out a condom while I'm going. And then we'll do Believer Skeptic, where I talk about why I think that there's science that can disprove the topic, and Chris talks about why people believe. Holy shit.
Well, today's very different because, shall we tell them what the topic is?
Oh, we should. Oh, I'm going to talk about... Can I say?
Okay.
Or do you have it? Because there was a misunderstanding, and I'm going to share it during...
No, there isn't.
There was. Yeah, because... So the topic, what I thought it was going to be was... We're going to talk about St. Nicholas. And so I thought the topic was the miracles of St. Nicholas. But then whenever Chris was doing his research, he's like, oh, I found this true crime about Santa. And I was like... Oh, well, that's not St. Nicholas. But then I was thinking about it, and I was going to say something like, isn't this St. Nicholas? But then I was like, no, this is way cooler, because then we'll have Santa, and we'll have some fun Santa stories, and then we'll have some St. Nicholas stories.
See,
so the topic will be Santa Claus.
Yeah. I even wrote about that here. I said, so total transparency, I didn't misinterpret the assignment this week, but instead took some liberties.
Did you really?
While we're talking about St. Nicholas and Santa Claus, both my stories are not specifically about the figure, but related. So
hey, oh, that's awesome. And yeah. I think it's going to be great. Whenever I think people like variety, and so my stories will be specifically about the man, the saint, the legend himself.
Yeah.
And he's got this really cool history that I'm sure you're going to share. Cool.
It depends on what you believe.
Oh, that's true.
So
okay, so with that, should we do our
drinks?
Yeah,
I'm already drinking mine.
Yeah, so. Go for it then.
I made a holiday mocktail. I kind of made it my own taste. It has Martinelli, so sparkling apple cider, cranberry juice, the basil simple syrup that I made for Thanksgiving. So I just put that in there. And then cinnamon, powder in it. And
so what is this called?
It was just like a cranberry apple cider cocktail.
Oh my gosh, mocktail. I've got to try this because it sounds
really
amazing.
Good. It tastes like Christmas in your mouth.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like the best thing I've ever drank. Mm-hmm. It feels like St. Nicholas himself is in my mouth.
You could probably put vodka in it and it'd be pretty good.
I think it's wonderful as is.
Yeah. All right.
It's going to be better than the shit I bought. Uh-huh. Okay, so.
It's the holidays. It's easy to find something holiday.
Oh, it was easy. Yeah, and I have a good one, but it's not. I like the message or what it was. So I actually let my brother-in-law, Chris, pick this out. And
you did that last time, too.
Yeah, and he's the one who himself picked this out and gave me the reason. And I was like, oh, that's great. I'm going to get it, even though it's going to be a Chardonnay, which is gross. Chardonnay, exactly. So one of the things that St. Nicholas, I guess, became most famous for and why he became associated with Santa Claus is because he would walk by and throw gold into people's windows. And Chris will probably talk about this some.
Sort of,
yeah. And so Chris saw this wine, and it's just called simply Gold.
Oh, I mean, it's in a menage a trois.
Yeah, it's a menage a trois gold.
So
history?
Should I get into history?
Yeah.
So when we think of Santa, we think about the commercialized plus-size man in a red suit with white hair and beard who travels the world yearly to hand out presents to well-behaved children.
Yum.
Gross.
Stocky, white hair. No, daddy.
Well, the origins of Santa actually come from a man known as Saint Nicholas. Just to be clear up front, not much is known about the history of St. Nicholas, since many writings have been lost and he is not mentioned much by other historians. Additionally, his writings were done on parchment, and that would mean people having to copy over and over. So yeah, a lot of it was lost to time. So a lot, like I can say, is hearsay and put together just by bits and pieces.
Exactly. Know? And people recopying things down.
It's misinterpreted.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
So St. Nicholas, also known as Nicholas of Bari, and in later years, Nicholas the Wonder Maker, was born around 280 AD in a village called Partara, which is near Mira in modern day Turkey.
Oh, he's old.
Yeah.
Wow. I thought he was like in the 1700s. Nope. Oh, old.
He's
okay.
Almost as old as Jesus.
As Chris.
Whatever. He was born to wealthy Greek parents who raised him as a Christian. Unfortunately, St. Nicholas lost both his parents to an epidemic while he was very young.
Eesh.
Being an only child, he inherited his parents' wealth, but instead of being greedy, St. Nicholas used the money to help the needy, sick, and poor, which sometimes were one and the same. It was said that St. Nicholas dedicated his life to God, and in recognizing his calling, his uncle, who was a bishop, ordained St. Nicholas a priest.
Like, just on a whim?
After seeing that, you know, that he was dedicated to this kind of life.
Okay.
You know?
Boom, you're a priest.
After St. Nicholas made a trip to the Holy Land, at some point he returned to Mira. A man who had succeeded St. Nicholas's uncle as the bishop had recently died. As a result, the priest had made a decision that the first priest to enter the church that morning would become the new bishop.
Oh, wow.
Wouldn't you know it, St. Nicholas went to church to pray, and being the first priest to enter the church that morning, became the new bishop.
That's like taken out of a sitcom where it's like, I'm going to ask the first person on a date.
Or it could be a miracle. Maybe that's what they're asking God. Like, oh. The first person who comes into the church.
So it's either a sitcom or it's a miracle. Yeah. One of the two.
Or a coincidence. Nicholas has been attributed to a number of miracles and stories of generosity. For example, there is a famous story in which St. Nicholas dropped a bag of gold near a family's fireplace nightly without them knowing who it was. Some say that this was the origin of the tradition of hanging stockings up by the fireplace for gifts.
Dang, so the gold. Man, someone should have got a wine based on that. Uh-huh. That's so relevant.
Right. As I mentioned, St. Nicholas had traveled to the Holy Land, and the ship he was traveling by was almost destroyed by a huge storm. According to the legend, he rebuked the waves, which caused the storm to calm. And because of this legend, he is known as the patron saint of sailors and travelers, as well as many cities which have and maintain harbors.
Really? Okay. Yep.
According to Greek folklore, he was sometimes called the Lord of the Sea and sometimes described like a Christian equivalent of Poseidon.
I was about to say, he's Poseidon.
Yeah. He is the patron saint of Greece and is one of the most recognizable saints, with September 6th being the day of celebration for the saint in many Greek cities. In addition, he is also known as the patron saint of merchants, archers, repentant thieves, sex workers, children, brewers, pawnbrokers, unmarried people, and a few others.
So basically, he's the patron saint of everybody.
Isn't everybody... Yeah. Such as in the aforementioned story, St. Nicholas was known to secretly give gifts to people. Sometimes shoes were left out in hopes he would put coins in them, which is a tradition that is celebrated in most places on December 6th, which is also the feast day
of St. Nicholas. Yeah, that's the one that we did.
Why December 6th? Well, no one can be exactly sure when St. Nicholas died, but some think it was on December 6th, sometime in the mid-300s AD. In Bari, Italy, still every year on this date, sailors will carry St. Nicholas' statue from the church to the sea in order for him to bless the waters in hopes of having safe travels in the upcoming year. After the Reformation in Northern Europe sometime in the 1700s, stories and traditions surrounding St. Nicholas became popular. But with the need or want of a figure to deliver gifts at this special time of year in England and some surrounding areas, the tradition of Saint Christmas, Father Christmas, or Old Man Christmas became popular. This character was modeled after a character from Middle Age story plays. And in France, he became known as Père Noël.
Père Noël.
In Austria and Germany, Christkind. Here in the U.S., we took Christkind and turned it into Kris Kringle. And then when the Dutch settled here in the U.S., they brought stories of St. Nicholas, which combined with Kris Kringle, then became Sinterklaas, eventually becoming Santa Claus.
Oh.
St. Nicholas then became popular again in the 1800s, and in 1821, an anonymous poem entitled Old Santa Claus with Much Delight was published. This poem was the first time that the figure was described in a sleigh being pulled by a reindeer, which is similar to the figure we know today. And of course, things changed once corporations got involved. Cough, cough, Coca-Cola.
Coca-Cola, yeah.
But for now, there you have a brief and very selective history of St. Nicholas.
Wow, that's awesome. So, question.
Yes.
Do they know for a fact that this person existed even, St. Nicholas?
Aren't his remains like spread throughout the world, supposedly?
And that's the thing is, that's something that, so whenever I get into debunk, I don't want to try to debunk Christmas or Saint Nicholas, so I didn't actually look and see if it actually is proven that he was actually a real provable person.
Yeah, I don't know for sure.
Okay, well
I'm more sure than not that he was. Yeah.
Okay, that's cool. And I know like December 6th was a big day for us because we would always set our shoes out.
Yeah.
And get candy in them, except for my brother who once got coal in his sock in his shoe, and he cried like bloody murder. It was amazing because he was a terrible child who deserved it.
I saw a meme the other day that it was like one of my Mexican Instagram accounts, and it said like, oh, you got coal, bring it over here and we can make a carne asada, you know?
Silver lining.
Yep. Have a barbecue.
Well, it's like I'd almost rather be bad.
Yep.
And get some coal. Interesting. All right, well, story time. Mm-hmm. So I found two stories about Saint Nicholas. One was, like, whenever I was looking up miracles of St. Nicholas, this one was in almost all of them.
Okay.
And it's a little weirder. So it's more of a tale. And then I found an actual long version of it. And that's what I'm going to be sharing. And the second one is something that supposedly really happens.
Okay.
So it's pretty cool. So the story number one is called The Pickled Children.
Ew.
Yum. I know, right? So, back near St. Nicholas's day, so it would have been a little after, there lived two little children, a boy named Pierre and a little girl.
Was he your neighbor growing up?
No, that was Gert. and a little girl named, fuck you, I mean, Estelle. Their parents died.
Getty.
Do what?
Getty.
Oh, Estelle Getty. Estelle Getty.
Well, she is old.
Fucking old.
Or was,
yeah. Aw, Estelle. So their parents died when they were very young, and their old grandmother was left to look after them. Mm. The grandmother was very poor, but she did the best that she could for them.
Yeah.
When autumn came and the winds blew cold, the berries withered and fell, the birds flew south.
My berries wither in the cold, too.
And fell. Might haven't fallen yet, no. But one day they will. The birds flew south, the streams froze over, and the ground was too hard to dig up roots. Soon there was nothing for the grandmother and the children to eat. The grandmother was old and became frail and weak. And so the children were so worried to see their grandmother wasting away that one day They decided to take things into their own hands, and they set off to find the nearest village where they could get some food for her. Mm. So they walked and walked until it began to get dark, and at last they came to the village. And there in the village was a butcher shop.
Some of the village people, would you say?
I can see the look in your eye that, like, oh, something's coming. There was a man in leather. The light shining from the shop windows was warm and inviting. They crept up close and looked into the window. Long strings of sausages hung from the ceiling.
With care.
With care. With hair. There were plump turkeys ready to cook and bins of apples and pumpkins. The warm glow from the fireplace within was tempting, and the children opened the door to go in.
Okay.
Now, the butcher was happy to see them. Apparently worried about their appearance, he sat them down by the fire and fed them. When the children were warm and comfortable, the butcher said, "Now, my friends, what brings you here?"
This is like Hansel and Gretel
shit. It kind of is, yeah. It really is. I wonder if this is... Huh, that's interesting.
Based on the Hansel and Gretel... Well, Hansel and Gretel is a Grimm's fairy tale. I wonder if they got the idea from this.
Maybe. Yeah. And they said that... I'm going to look that up. They said, mm-hmm. "We have come to buy some meat to make our grandmother some broth, for she is very ill." Mm-hmm. And the butcher's like, "Well, goodness, I have lots of meat to sell." Now... The butcher was a wicked man who worked with a local hunter who happened to be a cannibal. The hunter hunted and killed game for the butcher to sell, and in return, like, you scratch my back, I will pickle little children as a delicacy for the hunter to eat. The hunter loved the delicate, sweet flesh of pickled human flesh.
Particularly children.
Yeah, particularly children, because I guess it's like veal where maybe it's more tender. Right.
Gross.
Yeah, I know. It's gross. So when the butcher looked at the two little ones, he was overjoyed, although for not reasons that they thought. So the butcher saw a string of onions hanging from the ceilings and said, "My
little
ones.
Stuff it in your cavity."
Oh, my God. Ew. Chris.
Sorry.
He goes, "Surely you could use an onion or two. I get supersonic for your grandmother's broth." And they said that's very nice. She would be very pleased. So taking the children, the butcher went to lift them both up so they could grab the onions. But instead of actually doing that, he hit their heads together.
Oh, my God.
It didn't do it. That didn't kill them. They screamed for help with everything they had. And so he started banging their heads together again.
Even if they didn't die, like just hitting.
Yeah, just hitting them.
Two random children's heads together.
Yeah, well, it gets worse. But they screamed for help. And then he was like bang, bang until they unconscious. Then he took a sharp knife, cut them up, and put their body parts into the pickling tub.
Gross.
Yeah. It wasn't long before the hunter came to the shop and he said, "What a fine load of meat I've got for you. And pray tell, what do you have stored away for me?" And he smiled smugly and removed the lid from the pickle barrel.
Nasty.
He showed the hunter the children's remains pickling nicely. Now, this wasn't St. Nicholas's Day, because he was a long ways off when he heard the screams of the children. Thank goodness. The snow was deep, so it took him some time before he reached the shop. Mm-hmm. But when he looked in, he saw the butcher, and he knew that something was not okay.
Gross.
As he entered the shop, the butcher slammed the lid quickly on the pickle barrel and said, what can I do for you?" And St. Nicholas looked at the barrel and was like, "Yeah, there's a piece of meat that I would like to have in that pickle barrel. Can you just be a deer and reach in and get it for me?" The butcher got off the pickle barrel and leaned over a huge hog's head next to it. And I was like, "A what? That's actually a wine barrel."
Oh,
I did not know that. Yeah. I was like, "Oh,
I
like
literally,
a literal." Yeah. And I was like, that's weird.
You're in a butcher place. So you make me, maybe he's making hog's head cheese because they make cheese out of the head and the brain and stuff.
And they do. But I was like, so the hog's head in Harry Potter, the hog's head putt, it's because it's a wine barrel.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. And I was like, "Oh." So he went to reach and there was a knife in the corner. So he knew St. Nicholas was on to him, so he was going to grab the knife. Well, as the butcher leaned down to get it, St. Nicholas grabbed a large shin bone that he found on the floor and beat the butcher over the head with it.
What?
Yeah.
I thought St. Nicholas wasn't violent.
Well, so the butcher lost his balance and fell into the hog's head. St. Nicholas basically took him and pushed the lid down and drowned the butcher.
This is insane.
I know, right? So St. Nicholas is a murderer, but then he went over to the pickle barrel and took off the lid. And there he saw the remains of the children. He lifted out the pieces and warmed them with his hands and then breathed upon them. And gradually, bit by bit, they came together and came to life.
What?
St. Nicholas wrapped up a piece of meat for them, gave them a string of onions to carry, and sent them on their way home to the grandmother. They got there just in time. They made some good broth, and the grandmother became stronger and stronger, and they knew that she would survive the winter.
That's insane.
And that is the story of the pickled children.
Supposedly true.
Supposedly very... Why would you not believe that story?
Yeah.
So I think yours is like the most alarming part is that St. Nicholas murdered someone.
Yeah. Like, what the hell? He's supposed to be a saint. I know he brought other people back to life, but he killed one in the meantime.
Yep. St. Nicholas getting some coal in his stocking.
He still became a saint?
Yep. All right. Despite this true story.
Yeah. So... Do you want to hear... I'll give you a choice.
Oh!
Do you want to hear a true crime, not murder, or do you want to hear a conspiracy theory first?
Oh, so I get to pick the order?
Yeah.
Okay. True crime, not murder, or conspiracy theory. Let's do conspiracy theory first.
Okay.
Oh, boy.
So for this story, I'm going to tell a story that it just came out about 6 years ago about a potential government cover-up. A former NASA contractor, Donna Hare, has laid claim that after three flying during lunar landings, three flying saucers were spotted on the moon. The space agency has attempted to cover up the sighting, code naming it Santa Claus.
Wait, they land... UFOs landed on the moon?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Supposedly,
okay.
According to her. This all comes from a video interview that you can easily find online. Hare states she worked for Philco Ford, a computer and engineering contractor, sometime in the 1970s. She worked in NASA's photo labs, so she says, on and off site of the agency's headquarters, and states she had a high level of security clearance. With the clearance, she said she was provided access to parts of a building known as only Building 8. According to her, a lunch occurred in Building 8 in which high-ranking officials supposedly leaked information to her in secret. In the interview, Harris says that several sources had told her about three alleged UFOs that landed not too long after a moon landing. She continues saying she learned that NASA officials who wanted to speak out about the existence of UFOs had been threatened with a loss in salary and benefits, as well as them having to sign a type of kind of NDA, a non-disclosure agreement.
Oh, so this is like a big deal.
Yeah. And again, this all happened in the 70s. So things were very different back then, I guess. So according to Hare, one of the officials who had shed some light on the incident had, quote, disappeared. Now, if all that information was not unbelievable enough, Hare says that she was told that during one of the moon landings that astronauts had found the three UFOs had landed there when they touched down. So when they landed, it's almost like they followed them there, you know, the UFO.
Wait, so like, is this like whenever Buzz Aldrin or whatever, Neil Armstrong, I mean, like took his first steps on the moon, they stepped out
specifically, but she worked there in this, I kind of made the connection, she worked there in the 70s and she just said the lunar landing, so it was around that time, you know.
So they land and walk out and there's like another UFO like beatcha.
Yeah, or like at the same time, like landing when they do. Yeah.
Okay.
She claims that one employee was placed in quarantine where that person would debrief astronauts after the return home. That man claimed astronauts, when they returned, talked about their own experience with the UFOs following them, supposedly. Hare, in her own statements, has accused NASA of hiding UFOs from the public, as well as doctoring and obscuring thousands of photos before releasing them to the public.
Interesting.
In one instance, Hare claims that a man working at security at NASA informed her that he was made to burn photos by soldiers and was not allowed to look at the photos before. And in one instance, when he did look at a photo, he was hit in the head with the butt of a gun.
Shit.
According to Hare, she has told friends and family about the NASA incident, but herself has not gotten any backlash. She says all she got was a message saying she shouldn't talk about it. At the time the articles I used in research was written, there they had reached out to NASA and had not received response at that time, and I also couldn't find any follow-up beyond these articles. That being said, there was another person who claimed they have seen UFO pictures while working for NASA. The previous director of intelligence and headquarters, Tacital Air Command, Sergeant Carl Wolf, also claims he saw photos being altered to remove any strange or unusual happenings in the photos of the moon's surface. Wolf states that he was told by an officer that there was an alien moon base on the dark side of the moon, and their job was to remove any evidence of that from the photos. Many have found Hare's story suspect. One man said the company she contracted with was an important contractor for NASA, but that their work was for engineering and operational support as well as hardware, software for mission control, and in no way for photography department that Hare claims, you know. In an online forum, another person states that, quote, all that she says is that someone told her that a particular room is where they airbrushed the UFOs out of pictures. It may have been intended as a joke at her expense. She has managed to turn that joke into a career.
Wow.
Lastly, one person says that it's impossible then or now for NASA to produce Earth surface images with as much detail as Hare claims, and that a vigorous search by several UFO aficionados have searched for such photos in NASA's archives, and they have failed to turn up anything. And there you have the alleged 1970s NASA codename Santa Claus cover-up.
Okay, hold on. Does the moon rotate? I thought it did, so I thought that we will see each side of the moon as it rotates, or does it not? I need to look that up, because if it does, then of course that's fake, because with a telescope, you could sit there and just look at the moon.
I failed my astronomy class in college, so...
Oh God, I need to know. Okay, the other part of the story that I'm like, huh, was the security guard who they had burn all the photos, and whenever he looked at one, they hit him on the back of the head. If there's someone there the whole time supervising him, then why did they have him burn the damn photos at all? Why didn't they just do it?
I don't know.
Like, we're going to watch you burn these photos and hit you if you look at one.
Because it wasn't their job description.
That could be it. They were like, this is beneath us.
This is out of my realm. Sorry.
Yeah, this is not. I'm not getting overtime for this.
So, interesting conspiracy theory.
Very interesting. Donna Hare.
Yeah.
Okay.
Codename Santa Claus.
Codename Santa Claus. All right, I'm going to look up if the moon rotates.
Cannot be saved. Follow me.
Welcome to the Ugly Radio on the Podmoth Network, a lo-fi sci-fi audio theater anthology series made for late nights and strong drinks. Join us monthly as we broadcast a pirate signal across time and space. Featuring stories, songs, and frequencies from a rotating list of voice actors, writers, storytellers, and musicians. If you're looking for high-quality science fiction, skin-crawling horror, and other genre fiction, listen to The Ugly Radio on the Podmoth Network, now available wherever you get your podcasts. The Ugly Radio. See you in the void.
Story number two. I'm calling it The Manna of St. Nicholas. All right,
like,
so this is...
Manna, like in Wiccan?
Like manna from heaven?
Oh, I was thinking like, think of the craft, Wiccan.
Oh, manna.
Manna, which is like everything. It's hard to explain.
It's everything of St. Nicholas.
It's a hard concept to explain.
Okay, it could be like, yeah, this is like something beautiful, like a liquid. So, okay. And what's really cool about this is it's a really interesting story, and it's actually led to a bunch of true crime.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to share that with you as well. Okay, ready?
Okay.
The Santa Claus of lore continues to elude children who eagerly await his gifts without actually catching sight of him.
Yeah.
While St. Nicholas's corporeal existence is evidenced by his remains, mm-hmm. which are very special indeed. Now, in the years after the death of St. Nicholas of Myra, his tomb there in Myra was said to do something really special. His remains inside were said to secrete myrrh, one of the gifts the wise man brought to honor Jesus.
So did they bring it from his tomb? Oh, no, he was born after Jesus died. Never mind.
They invented a time machine, the wise men did, with their camels.
Who brought you myrrh from the future?
Who brought you future myrrh? Yes, in the years after his death, St. Nicholas's tomb was said to give off a sweet smell and to weep the mysterious liquid identified
that
as myrrh.
So crazy.
And it gets crazier. Oh, I'm glad you said it's so crazy. I actually wrote, it gets crazier. The myrrh had special powers. Most importantly, it would cure those who touched it.
Maybe that's what's in the Infinity Stone.
It just leaks myrrh.
Yeah.
It's lube. Like, ew. Oh my. Now, of course, then, pilgrims flocked to Myra for the privilege to touch and try to be healed by this, and it became a huge deal.
Of course.
But then the remains were moved. After the conquest of Turkey by the Muslim Turks in 1071, A plan was hatched to rescue the saints' remains and transport them. What are you laughing about?
Well, you said the remains were removed, so I was going to say, so they didn't remain.
Oh, my God.
I'm full of dad jokes. I love tonight.
It. It's great. A plan was hatched to rescue the saints' remains and transport them safely to Christian territory in southern Italy. In 1087, his relics were stolen and brought to Bari by a group of sailors, whereafter the relics were reinterred in a new basilica for the purpose.
That's cool.
Well, guess what happened?
They got stolen.
No, close. Oh. Miraculously, after being placed in their new home,
they leaked.
The new marble tomb also began to excrete the sweet-smelling holy liquid, which became known as the manna of St. Nicholas. It's now so huge, the annual collection of the oil that oozed from the relics is said to begin on May 9th and happens every single year. So this is still a thing. Now, the bones in the manna production remained an undisturbed miracle until 1953, when restoration work at the basilica required moving of the relics. A study was allowed and led by Luigi Martino, a professor of human anatomy at the University of Bari. When the tomb was opened, the incomplete skeleton was found to be resting in a shallow pool of liquid. Studies revealed it to be that of the remains to be that of a slight man in his 70s, matching the traditional story of St. Nicholas's death at age 74. Mm-hmm. The relics were left on a linen sheet, which were seen to collect oil even as the study continued.
Wow.
So they were like, leak, 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 while it was on that thing. Now, at the end of the construction in 1957, the bones were reinterred, where they have continued...
Reburied.
Where they were re-put in the ground, where they have continued to weep manna.
Wow.
So y'all, this is a big deal. And I actually didn't even know this, right? Well, it's so huge, in fact, that for hundreds of years, the myrrh has been collected, mixed with holy water, and bottled in small glass vials decorated with icons of the saint for sale to pilgrims.
Oh, really?
The miraculous oil became so well known, the bottles were taken to all corners of the Christian world. So sell, 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 sell. And this is where true crime comes in. And this is crazy and I guess kind of smart in an awful, evil way. So the bottles became so widespread that they eventually served as a cover for a very different kind of liquid intended not to heal, but to kill.
Poppers.
And this, not to kill, but to make your asshole relax so you can open it up to be penetrated. In the 17th century, a Sicilian woman named Teofania di Adamo developed a poison that she sold on the black market to women who wanted a way out of disastrous marriages. Because remember, fuck the patriarchy. Women were so mistreated.
But so, still, that's intense.
It's intense, yeah. So she eluded authorities by putting the poison in small bottles bearing the image of St. Nicholas. So she would take those same bottles and be like, well, these are so widespread and people aren't going to question me. Now, it was known as Acqua Tofano. It is thought to have been a mixture of arsenic, lead, and belladonna. Now, there's a quote here from Atlas Obscura that says, vials of this stealthy poison were sold to the ladies of Rome and Naples for the purpose of dispatching inconvenient husbands. Before she was finally caught and hanged for her crimes, accused of helping kill some 600 men, she allegedly passed on the deadly secret to her daughter, who went on distributing the poison disguised in innocent-looking delicate glass jars sold as manna of St. Nicholas.
That is crazy.
Yeah. And so, interesting side note before I finish, this is how Mozart supposedly died. This is what he told his wife on his deathbed in 1791.
Supposedly.
Supposedly, yes. He said in a supposed quote, "I know I must die, for someone has given me Acqua Tofana." Yep.
Oh, that is interesting.
Yeah. So that is the story of the manna of St. Nicholas. I love that story so much. I love it.
So crazy and interesting. I don't even know what to say exactly. So.
Other than poppers.
And so if anyone didn't know what poppers did, I basically just told you. Chris, give us some true crime.
Oh, all right. So I'll just get right into it. On December 23rd, 1927, a man dressed up as Santa Claus walked into the First National Bank of Cisco, Texas.
Oh, okay.
Do you know where that is?
I don't.
Oh. "Hello, Santa Claus," said a bank cashier. No one really blinked an eye, considering it was 2 days before Christmas.
Yep.
They just thought it was someone being extra festive. Also, it was 1927, so people are a lot less suspicious than they are today. A
lot more trusting.
Yeah. Well, not exactly the case here. Santa Claus was one Marshall Ratliff, a man who, along with his brother, had previously robbed a bank in Valera, Texas. For that crime, he was caught, and he and his brother each served a year of their sentence, only to be pardoned by the then governor.
Mm, interesting.
Following their release, they had planned to rob the Cisco Bank Ratliff had just entered, but his brother had been arrested before they could do it together. So Ratliff put together his own posse of two ex-cons and another man related to one of the ex-cons. The four men were staying at a boarding house in Wichita Falls, where they began to plot their scheme. Since Ratliff had been arrested before and was therefore a known man, he decided to put on a Santa Claus costume borrowed from the woman who ran the boarding house to conceal his identity. On the day of the robbery, Ratliff was dropped off a few blocks from the bank. Little did he know that he would cause such attention. Several kids saw Santa, got excited, and followed him and the other three men into the bank.
Oh, no. Santa!
When the first men first entered, saying, "Stick him up, everybody," all the people thought it was a joke until they saw the guns. Ratliff took money from the tellers and forced one to open the vault, while the three other men assisted with the customers and other employees.
Wait, what were the kids doing that followed him in?
Lying on the ground, I don't know.
Santa, no!
A woman and her daughter entered the bank during the holdup, but they weren't really noticed. So seeing what was going on, the two went out another door. Now there's a discrepancy.
Wait, they came all the way in and went all the way to another door?
Or like a second.
And the henchmen didn't actually see them?
Apparently.
Wow, they suck.
Yeah. Oh, now there's a discrepancy here. As one story that says that the woman screamed for help, which alerted the chief police. But another article said that she went to the police station across the street. So I guess choose your own adventure here. In the meantime, Ratliff had filled a burlap sack with money from the vault. One of the other robbers saw someone outside, which resulted in him shooting through the window. To his surprise, a shot was fired back. He then made several more shots into the ceiling to prove that they were armed and dangerous. With police and now citizens now aware of the situation, they essentially started a gunfight. Many citizens who own guns were now outside the bank shooting back at the robbers.
Oh, my God.
It was said more than 200 bullets were reportedly exchanged between the robbers, citizens, and the cops and everybody.
Wow, this is like Texas today.
Yeah. The robbers forced everyone in the bank to go out towards their getaway car. Of these people, the robbers decided to take two young girls hostage. As more shots rung out and the robbers tried to make it to the car, the chief and deputy of police were wounded, resulting in the chief's death later that night and the deputy being hospitalized for almost a month.
Oh!
In addition to these two, Ratliff and one of the other robbers were also wounded. As they began their escape in their car, they saw that the tire had been shot out, and depending on which story you read, either the gas tank was shot or they were running low on gas. So, again, discrepancies. Either way, they drove away to the edge of town, then carjacked another car belonging to the Harris family and being driven by their 14-year-old boy of the family.
Oh, my gosh.
The boy gave the men the car but took the keys himself.
Good for him.
The robbers put their stuff in the new car only to realize that they couldn't start it. One of the robbers by this time was unresponsive, so they left him in the car and put their stuff back in the first car along with the two hostages.
Oh, no.
Stupidly enough, they left the money with the unconscious dude without realizing it.
Oh, you know that
like Benny
music
Hill?
That plays as all this shit's going down. I'm so playing this in my head right now.
And by that time, the town mob had caught up with him and found the money and the unconscious robber. So the vigilante mob returned the money to the bank. The robbers left in the first car, but abandoned it, the Santa suit, and the two girls, continuing their escape on foot. The next morning, they hijacked another car and took the driver hostage for 24 hours. After 24 hours, they let the driver go and then hijacked yet another car.
Oh, my God.
And as the robbers tried to cross the Brazos River, another car chase and shootout occurred. A Texas Ranger involved in the gunfight was said to have shot all three men, the bullet taking Ratliff to the ground while the other two escaped. After a few days and escape attempts, the men were taken into custody. The three men were eventually put on trial. One man was sentenced to 99 years in prison for armed robbery. The second robber was said to have killed the two authorities and was given the death sentence, resulting in execution by electric chair on September 6, 1929. As for Ratliff, he was first convicted for armed robbery, resulting in 99 years in prison. Later, he was sentenced to execution for his role in the deaths of two citizens, but he attempted to appeal the case based on insanity plea.
Oh, of course he did.
He was placed in prison, but while there, a mob gathered and overpowered the jailers, allowing them access to Ratliff. The mob then dragged him out, tied his hands and feet, and attempted to hang him on a nearby power pole.
Oh, shit.
But on the first attempt, the knot came undone and he fell to the ground.
Did he get up and run and escape?
On the second attempt, the knot held and Ratliff was hanged.
Oh, my God.
When all was said and done, from beginning to end, there was a total number of 6 people who died. And that is the wild-ass case known as the Santa Claus Bank Heist of Cisco, Texas.
Oh my God, that's crazy. What a great story. I mean, not, I don't want to like say yay for the dead people, but that is so interesting and I've never heard of that. And
me neither. I found it and I was like, this is like almost unbelievable. It's just so, and that's why I say I couldn't leave it all out of details because it just had everything, you know.
Betty Hill. And if they're running in and out of doors, like
it's like a farce. Yeah.
Oh God, that's so crazy and ridiculous. I really, even though of course, you know, like you don't want people escaping, but I kind of wish that the knot broke and he fell, landed on his feet and just took off running and was never seen again.
Like that's how I would want to finish the story. But anyway.
So Cisco is in Eastland County, if you know where that is.
Well, if it's by Wichita Falls, which I'm guessing, then I drove through there all the time.
Yeah.
So I've been there. So it's going to be like Central Texas.
Yeah, probably.
Cool. Well, that's neat. I'll have to look up more about the Santa Claus bank heist.
Yeah.
So believer skeptic?
Yes.
Okay. So I am not going to be debunking St. Nicholas because that would be shitty. But what I am going to do is share something that I found about the remains.
Okay.
Various other churches in the world, first of all, have laid claim to relics of St. Nicholas, including bits of his fingers and teeth. He even has a set of remains at another major repository in Venice. But, oddly enough, none of them have ever been found to secrete any subject or substance or whatever the word is. Any subjects. No people are secreted. So how are, is this one batch of remains so selective? Like, why is this one batch only? Is it a miracle? Well, maybe not. Once believed to be an oil, the liquid oozing from St. Nicholas's bones in Bari was found by scientists there at the University of Bari to be water.
What?
In all likelihood, it forms as condensation due to the tomb's location underground in a port city.
So he has some sweaty bones.
Some sweaty bones. Those sweaty bones are working out. Despite the seemingly less miraculous revelation about the substance's composition, though, many still believe in its curative powers and sacredness. And I thought this was really interesting. Robert Bartlett, an expert on the veneration of saints, explains that for devotees, relics are simply objects that had been in contact with the saint during his or her lifetime and objects that had been in contact with the saint's tomb. Hence, as long as the water is collecting on the bones, people still think it's imbued with holiness. So they're like, we don't care if it's myrrh or whatever it is.
Bones,
anything touching and coming in contact with his bones is holy.
Yeah.
And so that's why they can say, so say what you will. Like science can say what this is, but we still believe that it's holy. And I thought that's interesting. So that way I can debunk maybe what the liquid is, but not be debunk people who have been made happier or more fulfilled touching themselves with something that is hopefully not arsenic and acqua tafani.
Acqua di Gio.
That's pretty toxic. Have you ever smelled that shit?
Yes. Okay, so spoiler alert for believers in Santa. I say believers in Santa because you better not let some fucking kids be listening to this podcast.
Oh, yeah, hide their ears.
So my believer is kind of out of left field. Yes, I believe Saint Nicholas was a real person, but as for Santa Claus, do I believe in him? You better believe it.
Oh, really?
Just kidding.
Oh, I was like, oh, tell me more.
Instead, I looked at first statistics. I could not find anything recent, but in 2013, it was said about 43% of kids believed in Santa.
Wow.
Another 2013 article stated that 1 in 6 adults still write to Father Christmas, but the latter can be more attributed to tradition rather than actual belief.
Oh, that's cute, though.
Yeah. But I digress. So is believing in Santa necessarily a bad thing? There isn't a ton of research on the subject, but according to one article, some related research states having a vivid imagination is beneficial for a few reasons. It can exercise a child's counterfactual reasoning skills, engaging the border between the possible and the impossible. It fosters a safe environment for creativity, imagination, and play. And lastly, it gives us shared memories, which can encourage empathy, kindness, and generosity, something we can use more of in the world. So when all is said and done, let your children believe in Santa. It's healthy to a certain age, obviously.
Sure.
It's fun, and most of all, it's not hurting anyone one bit.
Oh, I love that. Oh, that's so cool. So it's healthy to believe in Santa. Mm-hmm. That's really cool. I want to like read more about how it helps foster empathy and kindness.
Yeah.
I guess maybe if you're imagining different scenarios, that is part of it. But that's really cool. Okay. Yeah. I believe.
I believe in miracles.
Oh, baby.
So, creep of the week.
Creep of the week. I don't know what you have for this.
All right. This is a short one. We got an email that says, good afternoon, fellas.
Hi.
I hope your day is going well. I have a creep of the week that I either forgot or suppressed that my wife reminded me of after listening to your Skinwalker episode.
Wow. Oh, they listened to one of the oldies.
That's like episode 2.
Yeah.
When we were in college, we used to drive around at night for hours talking. We lived in a small farming community, so it was just empty roads for miles in every direction. We got to talking about spooky stuff, and I was telling her about all the tales of skinwalkers. We decided enough creepy talk and that it was time to go home. Not 5 minutes later, sitting on the side of the road was a large white dog just staring at us as we passed by.
Ooh.
Since then, we have never talked about them but by name again, since that is a good way to summon them to you. Hopefully it's just a stray dog and we didn't summon anything, but it was very creepy. Araceli.
Wait, where was this at?
I don't know where she's from.
Oh, we need more. Okay, we need to know how big the dog was, like, and how it looked at them, like if it was like seductively or other.
Seductive dog.
But you know, like, that's, it's got to be something that if it's still a thing today that they still think about,
yeah,
that it must have been something really creepy, like a creepy dog.
Yeah,
in some
like
way.
If it left an impact on you. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Ooh, give us more details.
Yeah. So,
all right, cool.
Thank you for that story. If you have any creep of the week or just weird stories, you can send them to bspodphx@gmail.com. You can find the podcast on all podcast platforms. You can find us on social media at bspodphx. And yeah, thank you all for listening as usual, because you guys are amazing.
Yeah. And my books, The Gay Teen's Guide to Defeating a Siren, as always, are available. There is a Christmas chapter, holiday chapter in the books. So feel free to have one chapter of Christmas in those. And that's it. All right. So everyone have, hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And that your holidays are great.
Are
whatever
festive.
Festive. And bring you peace no matter how you choose to celebrate.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And with that, everyone, we hope you enjoyed the episode and bye. Bye.
See you again next time.